Around this time of year, when you go to the farmer's market or the grocery store, you start to see this stuff that looks like celery, only the stalks are pink. Some of you might pass by this mysterious new addition to the produce section thinking nothing of it, but for others, this is an exciting moment. It's rhubarb season, and it only lasts for a very short time. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today, before we go exploring bakeries on KCUR's Central Standard, we're going to check out the best seasonal produce and learn what to do with it in the kitchen. My guest for that is Paige Vandergrift. She used to work at the American Restaurant. Now she's a private chef, a cooking instructor, and a food blogger. Her blog, For the Love of the Table, includes a 12 months of fresh food calendar featuring different seasonal ingredients every month. Thanks for being here, Paige.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
As a chef, what does spring in Kansas City mean to you?
The opening of the farmer's market. And that's not just as a chef, that's as a cook in general. I love to go to the farmer's market, usually in early April. I'll head down and start checking out what's coming in from the farmers.
What are you seeing there now? How's the selection looking?
Everything is very green. The selection of actual foods that you can consume is pretty spare still at the moment. There's lots of plants for sale, but the spring onions have started to come in, asparagus, and lots of lettuces and greens, kale and spinach, things like that.
Tell me more about spring onions.
I love spring onions. Spring onions, to me, signify the beginning of the food year, basically. I've been cooking, you know, with onions that have been in storage now, and they take a lot of coaxing when you cook them to soften and to release their flavor. And spring onions, they're green. Part of them is green, and they're fresh, and they're juicy, and they cook quickly, and they change the whole mood of the kitchen.
Is there a difference in the flavor that's released once it's released, or is it more in the immediacy of the flavor?
I think it's probably more the immediacy, but I think fresh would come to mind, and they're sweeter. Generally, they can also be hotter than a storage onion.
How do they look different from onions that you might see at the market later as the season progresses?
Well, they're slender. They look very much like green onions that you would see in the grocery store, green onions or scallions. As the season progresses, they start out pencil thin, you know, thin and white, and with their long green attached. And then some of them just get fatter, like a leek. And other ones will begin to actually produce a little ball, like the beginning of an onion. And so by the time we get into mid-June, those spring onions are early summer onions. They still have the green attached, but they might be the size of maybe a tennis ball or a golf ball, maybe smaller. And then further on into the season, they'll start being very large. And then at that point, they start to age them and the greens begin to rot and fall off. And they begin to age those then for the year.
What's your favorite thing to do in the kitchen with spring onions this time of year?
Oh, they go into everything. I start a grain pilaf with them, or I'll put them into the base of a pasta sauce. You could feature them in a tart, you know, like a quiche with ricotta or goat cheese.
Everything.
Everything, yeah. But any place you would put an onion, you could put some of a spring onion.
We started the show with rhubarb, and we'll get back to rhubarb, mm-hmm. but I want to talk about asparagus.
Yes.
That's the featured ingredient for April on your calendar.
Yes.
How do you select asparagus? Is it true that the smaller ones are tastier? I go for smaller ones, but partly just because they're not as tough.
Well, I think the most important thing when you're choosing in terms of size is to get a bunch that has all the same size, because the cooking time for the spears will be the same. That way, large spears take a little bit longer, the skinny spears take less time, and so if you throw them all into the same pot, if they're a different size, then you'll have some that aren't fully cooked or some that are overcooked.
That makes sense. What else do you think it's important for people generally to think about with asparagus? I mean, how do you generally think about asparagus?
Well, when I'm looking for it at the store, you want to search for something that looks recently cut, or even at the farmer's market. And also, I think sometimes people overlook the fact that the tip should be tight and close together, and sometimes they even appear to be sprouting, and they are sprouting. That's kind of, you know, they're basically like a flower. And so I think that as it ages and as it begins to sprout, the flavor changes. It can get a bit bitter. You want to look for something that's tightly closed. I think something else that people don't think about is cleaning asparagus. It shoots up through sandy soil, and so there's sand embedded in the tips. And so I think it's important to soak the asparagus for a few minutes in cool water to release that grit so that you won't be eating grit when you're...
Wow, I have never considered that. You said that you start buying asparagus early in the season. Mm-hmm. How is early spring asparagus different from what you get in, say, June?
There's probably not too much of a difference unless the fields are at the end of their cycle. Asparagus is a perennial plant, and so it starts coming up depending on where you are in the country. If you're in California, maybe in March, and here, mid to late April, it starts shooting up through the ground, and then it goes for about 6 weeks. And I think that farmers and growers tend to stop cutting and production at a certain point and allow the asparagus to flower. But I think as long as they are harvesting, I don't really notice much of a difference in the flavor.
What other foods go well with asparagus? I put it in pasta primavera mm-hmm. with other fresh veggies, mm-hmm. and I use it as a side for fish, but I would say I'm kind of in a rut beyond that.
I love asparagus with all of the green vegetables of spring. It's wonderful with peas. Asparagus is good with artichokes, fava beans. The spring onions are delicious with it, any of the greens. But I also think of cured things like prosciutto or smoked salmon or smoked trout. It's wonderful with mushrooms. Mushrooms and asparagus is one of my very favorite combinations.
Do you ever go mushroom hunting this time of year?
I have never been mushroom hunting. I hear that hunting morels is a lot of fun, but I have never been mushroom hunting.
Well, how about morels and asparagus?
Wonderful together. A prime combination in the spring.
Let's move on to dessert, which is where you typically find rhubarb on a menu. Is it really rhubarb season just yet?
Not quite. I have never been able to keep a plant alive in my yard. It's actually more of a northern plant than it doesn't do that well here, but it does grow here. I always kill it. But it also is a perennial, and it starts to come up sometime in late April, early May.
Let's describe it, what it looks like and how it tastes, because it's very distinctive, but honestly, it's not something everyone's eaten. I hadn't tried it until I was probably in my 20s.
I didn't try it until I was about 10 or 11. I moved into a house in Minnesota that had a rhubarb plant, and so that was when I first tasted it. But it looks like celery, exactly like celery, except if you were to see it in the field, it has massive leaves, beautiful leaves, as a matter of fact. And those leaves are typically cut off before it goes to market because they're so large and because they're not edible. They contain a high quantity of oxalic acid, which is toxic. So that comes off first. But they vary in color from ruby red to sort of pale pink. So I guess you would look for something that looks like individual stalks of red or pink celery.
Can you tell me what it tastes like?
It's tart. Tart is the immediate thing that comes to mind. Tart and tangy and sort of fruity, maybe berry-like even. But it's a flavor that once you've had it, I think you recognize.
Have you ever had it without being sweetened? Because even though it's sweet, if you eat it without sugar, that is not necessarily the first word I'd use.
No, I have never eaten it without sugar. Someone told me one time that they grew it when they were growing up and they used to snack on it, but they would have a bowl of sugar and they would dip the end in sugar and then take a bite of the raw rhubarb and then dip it in some more sugar and take a bite of it. So I think that it's probably not very pleasant. I don't think I've ever tasted it without sugar.
Yeah, I think that those two were meant to be together.
I think so.
Do you know why rhubarb season is so short? Because really, like at the grocery store or at the markets, it feels like it's just a few weeks when you see it.
Because it's a perennial plant, perennial plants generally have a shorter cycle than annuals that are planted in fruit all summer. It's also a vegetable. It's not a fruit. But I think it may have something to do with our heat here. In cooler climates, I think they get a longer, more extended season than we do here.
So you make a rhubarb jam. Can you walk me through how you do it?
Well, you start out with sugar and orange juice. And if you can get your hands on blood orange juice, that will make the color even more beautiful. And actually, blood oranges are a bit sweeter, too. And you boil that until it just begins to caramelize. And then when it has begun to caramelize around the edges, you throw in the diced rhubarb and cook it until it reduces to a thick, glossy, jammy puree.
So you just chop it up kind of like, is it sort of like how you'd chop celery at the base of a soup or something like that?
Pretty much. Dice it, maybe half-inch dice.
And then can you describe visually what happens when rhubarb is in the pan with these other things cooking, simmering down?
Well, when you first throw it into the pan, because you've almost made a caramel, in fact, you have sort of made a caramel for this particular jam, the caramel seizes up. And so you have this sort of ball of hard caramel and chunks of raw rhubarb that you're having to sort of work around. And then as the rhubarb begins to release, it's water, and rhubarb is loaded with water. It's one of the things that makes it difficult to cook with. As it begins to release that water into the pan, the caramel softens up again, and then it begins to boil rapidly, and the rhubarb begins to disintegrate right before your eyes. And then pretty soon it becomes very thick. You need a long spoon so that it won't spatter all over you and burn you. But you allow it to just cook and bubble away. And it just looks like a puree for a while with little chunks, and then pretty soon it begins to deepen in color and bubble very thickly and have sort of a glossy sheen to it.
This is making my mouth water because I've done exactly what you're describing, not with blood orange juice, I need to say, but it is, it's a really kind of amazing sensory experience.
Cooking is in general, I think, but yes, I think it is.
What do you do with the rhubarb jam once you've made it? Do you put it in the freezer and keep it for a year?
This is a quick jam, and I would just put it into a Tupperware and put it in the refrigerator. Most often, this particular one, I have been making and putting it into a bar cookie, sort of a shortbread bar cookie. But you could also spread it on toast. Mostly, you would want to store it probably in the refrigerator.
Paige Vandergrift, where can people take your classes?
At the Merck in Lawrence, and occasionally I teach at A Time for Everything in Lee Summit.
You can follow Paige's blog at fortheloveofthetable.com. Thanks for being here, Paige.
Thanks for having me.
If you need some good bread or a tasty baked good as a vehicle for your rhubarb jam, you are in luck when KCUR's Central Standard returns the city's best bakeries. Call 816-235-2888 with your favorite. I'm Gina Kaufman. Don't go away. It's Food Critics time. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and now we're talking about bakeries. The food critics are Charles Ferruza of The Pitch. Hi, Charles.
Hey, Gina.
Jenny Vergara of Feast Magazine. Good morning, Jenny.
Good morning.
And Jill Silva is joining us. She stopped by from the Kansas City Star. Hi, Jill.
Hi, Gina.
We are talking about bakeries, and I know some of my Jewish friends and relations are probably like, really? Now? Because it's Passover for one more day. So that means no leavened bread. But guys, it's over tomorrow, and when it is, you'll be glad you have our handy guide to the best bakeries in town. So in that spirit, let's start with bagels. When Meshuggie Bagels was about to open, we talked with our own bagel maven about whether you can really have an authentic bagel this far from New York. Now that he's had a chance to try the bagels at Meshuggah for himself, we've got him on the line to get his review. David Seldner, good morning.
Good morning, Gina. How are you?
Good. How about you?
I'm well. I am well. Thank you.
So you've tried Meshuggah's. What did you think?
Well, tried and tried and tried again. It's, in a word, it's terrific. The owners, Peter and Jenna Lind, are really astounded by the bagelow that is apparent in Kansas City. We've really got a winner, and it's Meshuggah. About a half dozen couples went down the couple of weeks back, and we had the pleasure of experiencing it firsthand. And Pete was handing out sort of, to use the Yiddish word, a bissel of bagel, a small piece before we made it. We gave our order, and we just looked at each other and collectively smiled.
Well,
it's great.
Your criteria for an authentic bagel involved, among other things, density. Did the bagel you got stick to your ribs sufficiently?
It did. You could hold it in one hand and feel its heft.
Good. Well, so I'm getting the feeling you would, in fact, take a New Yorker there.
I am a New Yorker, and I take myself and a whole host of other New Yorkers and Jerseyites and et cetera. Absolutely. Years ago there was I don't know if you all had Levy's Rye Bread in Kansas City. Do you recall that at all?
We're a lot of heads shaking no.
Okay. Levy's Rye Bread, they were headquartered in New York. They had this significant marketing campaign all over the New York subways, and they had one of their ads was very distinctive. They had a Native American fellow, and he'd say, "You don't have to be Jewish to love Levy's Rye Bread." So too with the bagels. I'm Jewish. My wife Jean is not. She's a transplant Texan who spent 20 years in New Jersey, and she looked at me and she said, "It's absolutely the real deal." So we are just absolutely delighted by it.
So there you have it. You don't have to be Jewish. Thank you, David.
You don't. I mean, every batch of the bagels has a little bit of Jewish soul in it, a little bit of neshama, so to speak, and it's really a great product. They are adding to the menu. They're added a new bagel, a rye bagel, which, while I haven't had, I'm certainly looking forward to having. It's one of the originals, and then they've also added several different kinds of new schmears. They've got scallion cream cheese. They've got toasted everything and cinnamon sugar, and they actually have a limited quantity of sable for fish lovers. So I really think they're focusing on the basics and expanding outwards, both in terms of product type and the cohort, the demographic they're looking to lure into the shop.
Well, thank you, David. That's a great review, and that was David Seldner, our bagel maven, who came in to talk to us about delis and bagels a while back. So that's his review. Jill, Jenny, Meshuggah has made your list for best bakeries in town as well.
Well, it's very close to my house, dangerously close, I would tell you. but I love it. For being a small place, I mean, it's mostly a takeout place, and I think that's the first thing everybody kind of realized early on when the rush hit. But, you know, they've got this really fantastic kitchen that's up, obviously, in kind of close to the Liberty area, that has a giant, giant bagel oven that they brought in from New York City. They've been consulting with several bagel makers from New York City. So I think the reason the authenticity is there is because they've really done their homework. They really recipe tested this bagel recipe that they're using. And it is. It's just phenomenal. Phenomenal.
Well, I think I went up also to Pleasant Valley to see their operation. And from what I understand, it's all in the boiling. And so I got to watch them one morning boil those bagels, and they're really, I think, some of the most fabulous bagels I've had, and definitely filling a hole in Kansas City.
Filling a hole. Getting beyond bagels, you guys, I'm curious about who around the table is, when we think about bakeries more generally, who is a sweet tooth bakery goer and who is more of a savory bakery goer? I'm seeing Charles raise his hand about sweet tooth bakery.
I grew up going to bakeries for one reason only. You know, the sugary stuff. And we had great bakeries in my hometown. And, my mother bought Wonder Bread. We did not buy bread in a bakery, which, you know, is probably a bad thing. But, yeah.
So who else, what are your preferences, Jenny?
You know, I think one of the things, kind of to tag off of what Charles said about Wonder Bread, that a lot of people kind of tend to forget is that, you know, bakeries in the olden days were a once a week, once a day stop. I mean, like the European style, right? You stop in for your loaf of bread. And so I think there's a lot of people that are puzzled as to why, when they go to places like Meshuggah Bagel or a bakery to buy things, why things don't last on the countertop at home as long as they do. I mean, these items don't have any preservatives. Typically, if they're done right, they have just, you know, real butter, real sugar. And so they're not meant to last. And the important thing, I think, to remember really about almost every baked good is that they freeze beautifully traditionally. So if you come home with a big sack of bagels, for example, probably 24 hours is about all you want to leave it on your countertop. And then the rest of it needs to go in the freezer. So I think that's one of the things that people go, oh, I don't buy things at bakeries because they just don't last as long on the countertop.
Well, let me ask this. I don't like to buy bread at bakeries anymore because, A, I don't eat enough of it. Mm-hmm. Can I freeze bread?
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay. Yes, I've done that.
Freezes
I'm a big,
beautifully.
Big bread fan. And yeah, you can definitely do that.
Jill, anything to add about just the bakery landscape and what you seek out within it?
Well, I am a little bit more interested in savory, and I do like unusual things, which has led me to some interesting places lately. You know, I do appreciate sweet, but stopping by Tout Le Jour recently was really fun, and that's an Asian-style bakery, so a lot of really interesting different things there. So I'm always kind of looking for what's different. I also love artisan breads.
Well, we'll get back to some of these specific places, but call 816-235-2888 with your bread or bakery recommendation and the baked good that maybe you're seeking out in Kansas City and haven't quite been able to locate. Our critics might be able to help. 816-235-2888. So, Jenny, you've got an oldie but goodie on your list, McLean's Bakery in Waldo.
Absolutely. When I first moved to Kansas City in 1991, my grandmother lived over in the Waldo area, and she would have me pick up the phone every week and order a sticky pecan roll, a dozen sticky pecan rolls that I would pick up for her every Saturday, and then she would sit every morning and have her cup of coffee with one of those rolls. That was her treat. So I have this really huge soft spot for these folks, but over the years I found that, you know, my jam is more the infamous chocolate cup cookie, which I think everybody loves. It's like a pecan sandy that has this beautiful chocolate swirl of frosting on the top. Super, super old school. And there's a little bit of salt in the sandy that just is that salty, sweet kind of combo. So I'm probably sitting between Charles and Jill in terms of savory versus sweet. I kind of like a little of both. And to me, that chocolate cup cookie at McLean's is it. But, you know, they're doing breakfast, they're doing lunch, they're doing some more dinner service, or they're going to be doing more dinner service in their new location that they're opening up kind of closer to 119th and Row.
Yeah, and you see people drinking coffee there in the mornings.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think, you know, the more that they have the ability to seat people, the more it becomes a hangout, like a coffee shop. You know, a lot of bakeries are just kind of order and go or pick up and go. But if they have seating, you'll notice a lot more kind of cafe atmosphere.
So Jenny Vergara is recommending McLean's Bakery in Waldo. And Charles, let's stay for a moment in that Brookside Waldo neighborhood. Tell me about Heirloom Bakery and Hearth.
Heirloom Bakery and Hearth was created by this young married couple. When I say young, I think they're like 13, and who really had a vision. An amazing.
And I should clarify that was a joke.
That was a joke. They look 13. Of course, to me, everybody looks 13. But they had a vision, and I can't be the only one who says that, having lived in that Brookside area for a long, long time, they really did have to have a vision to see that old, ugly, former gas station turn into this beautiful, beautiful bakery. And they have beautiful things in it. They do have a lot of really good breads. I've bought bread there many times. And they've got good sweet things, too. And, you know, the only complaint I might have about Heirloom Bakery and Hearth is that you have to stand in line to get in there. It's so busy.
It's a popular place.
It's a hugely popular place.
And I've noticed that they have some of the work that usually happens behind closed doors is happening really very much on display behind the counter.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think it's a wonderful thing. You know, who doesn't love visuals anymore? I'm sure you two feel the same way about that place.
Oh, my gosh. It's adorable. I mean, you know, really. And what I love is kind of the underdog story about it. I mean, this was a couple that was baking out of a commercial kitchen. They were selling at the Brookside Farmers Market for years and years. They built up a following. People loved them.
Years and years. Jenny, they're like 13.
I know. It was at least 2 or 3 years. And, you know, saving their pennies and drawing up their business plan while they were looking for just the right location. And you have to kind of honor the fact that they really started at the ground level with this thing. And now they've got this gorgeous bakery with all the right equipment. And, you know, if I had anything to say about their location at all, it would be the fact that I want more parking because it's so popular. It's always slammed. But the counter, you know, where you order is right there inside the front door, which creates the line that goes outside. So it's too bad that there isn't more of a space, I guess, to kind of stand and place your order. But you know what? So it doesn't matter.
It's a flow issue. But
I'll wait outside. I'll wait outside for their pastries. It's no problem for me.
We've heard a lot about the location and the flow of traffic once you're in there. But I would love to hear just a little bit more of what you order at Heirloom and what you like about it.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that they do that really, really well there that it's kind of playful and fun, and it was one of their kind of hallmarks, I think, when they were doing the farmers markets for sure, and then eventually into the coffee shops, are these riffs on old school favorites like the Pop-Tart, which has made a huge comeback. So they make basically kind of handmade Pop-Tarts like we all remember from childhood. They kind of even look the same, but they're made with real fruit filling that they make, obviously, in-house. And this
they're not dry and crumbly like I remember Pop-Tarts being.
Right. They're nice and flaky. They have a
riff. Do they have sprinkles?
Yes, they have sprinkles. And they do a riff on a Cheez-It, which is delicious. They sell them usually kind of in their pantry section. You can just grab a couple bags and go. And those are also really, really good. So it's kind of their own version of a Cheez-It. So I kind of appreciate the fact that they're taking these nostalgic kind of favorites and reinventing them. So,
Charles, anything to add?
I'm trying to... They have the best cinnamon roll I think I've had in a long time, which I really shouldn't be eating, but they're too good to pass up. I'm not a big Pop-Tart fan. One was plenty for me. And but I like the savory things there too, Jill. I do like the crackers they have and the breads they have. And what I really love about the place is that it harkens back to a day when every neighborhood had its own bakery.
Yeah, and I think that's really where we're headed now.
Yeah, yeah.
And you were saying that you don't really like to come out towards, you know, you're not out in Lenexa. I'm at Ibis all the time because that's
Talk to us about Ibis.
That's my neighborhood bakery,
yeah,
you know, so I'm all excited about that because it's so close and I can get there easily.
Location is important. Yeah. It really is.
Yeah.
I will say that Ibis has some of the best savory bread, like a pizza style bread almost, or a flatbread.
They've got lots of different kinds of breads. They do the pan au levain, which is the wild bacteria that you put together and you get that fermentation and you get your bread. It's just a really beautiful sourdough, you know, slightly tangy kind of bread, very rustic. They do also a lot of pastries as well, which I think people are not as aware of. But boy, have they just really taken off. You know, they started out with toast. In the Black Dog coffee shop, which is owned by the parents of the owners of Ibis. And so that really thick, you know, toast, people go, well, toast, how is that special? And I'm like, wait till you see this. It's a, you know, it's a half, 1.5 inch to 2 inch slab. It's that deep, rich peasant kinds of breads with lots of grains, and you get some nice toppings on it, some marmalade, some jams, some sea salt, some nut butters. Oh,
and
my
gosh.
And
they serve it that way at Ibis?
They serve it that way at Ibis. And from there, you know, they became so popular that they eventually had to sort of take over the dojo next door. And luckily that space was available. And,
yeah, sometimes you just got to take over the dojo.
You know, knock out the wall. And they have a fabulous bakery. And to Charles's point about being able to see things, all their work is done out in the open. So you're just sitting kind of among the bakers. And I think it's really cool also that they are apprenticing with a lot of local bakers, and that would be from Johnson County Community College and the Broadmoor Bistro.
So this is Ibis Bakery. Charles?
I want to say in connection with your earlier comment about this being the last day of Passover, they have some of the most wonderful macaroons I have ever tasted in Kansas City. I mean, really wonderful macaroons.
Hmm. I definitely agree on that. That is one of my very
because
favorite
I think,
things.
You know, aren't they a tradition?
Yeah. They have to be prepared in a pretty specific way to qualify for if you're truly following Passover, something that comes out of a bakery might not cut it.
You're
but
right.
It depends on how stringent you are about that. My mom probably wouldn't eat them, but a lot of people would. I would.
So, wow.
They're very delicious. And you know, they have this nice bitter chocolate on them.
Oh, they're wonderful. And,
yeah.
You know, it's not that easy to find real macaroons anymore.
You're here.
In Kansas City.
Yeah.
Well, and Jill, quickly, you're also recommending a gluten-free bakery in Prairie Village.
Yes. This one's called Emily Kate's, and it's just doing wholesale business at this point. But what happened was the mother had two daughters who are gluten intolerant, and she took it upon herself to recreate the baked goods that she felt they needed in their life and that they wanted in their life. And so she spent a long time working on the recipes. And she worked in conjunction with Aaron Brown of Dolce. And so that's one of the places that you can find their baked goods. And hopefully one day they're going to be certified real soon.
Well, when KCUR Central Standard returns, we'll be ready to hear from you. What's your go-to bakery? Anything new in town we should be checking out? 816-235-2888. If there's a baked good you salivate for but haven't found in Kansas City, you can let us know about that too. 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman, back in a minute. Hello again. Today we're talking about bakeries on KCUR's Central Standard with the food critics, Charles Ferruza, Jenny Vergara, and Jill Silva. I'm Gina Kaufman. Let's hear what bakeries our callers have to recommend or what items people are looking for. We have actually quite a few people who are on a baked good search. Let's talk to Susie in Kansas City. Hi, Susie.
Hi.
What are you looking for?
I was wondering a couple recommendations for sprouted grain breads.
Sprouted grain breads. And tell us a little bit about what those are and why you're looking for them.
Well, it's supposed to be, because our bread is so processed now, a lot of people are having gluten intolerance. So the sprouted grains they're grains that are actually sprouted. And then instead of using flour, they grind those up and use that to make bread instead. So I've been trying to find something, and I've found a couple locations, but just wasn't sure what's best.
Well, why don't you start by telling us what you found, and then we'll see what our critics have to say.
Well, Ibis, you guys were talking about them earlier, and not from a bakery, but I've been buying Ezekiel bread, and I freeze it, and I'm not really happy with how it comes out, so...
Okay, well, let's hear.
Hopefully I can find something local.
Yeah, let's hear what else. So she's saying that she's had some sprouted grain bread at Ibis. Anyone know of another place to get it?
I'm going to take a guess that she might try 1900 Barker
in Lawrence. I was just
thinking
the same thing.
Yeah, it sounds like something that they would possibly be doing.
I don't know if they still do, but they did used to have it at Fervere. I'm not positive whether that's still current.
Yeah, I think they do. And it's one of those things where you have to kind of catch it or special order it, especially from that place. But I think also Farm to Market has been playing around quite a bit with trying some of these, you know, more less processed grains to make bread. I mean, it's very popular. So I'm guessing everybody probably has a loaf or two maybe to offer. She just might have to call and find out.
Let's hear from Pat in Leawood. Hi, Pat.
Hello. I want to make a comment about the frozen bread in the fridge, and I think Kansas City has a gem in farm-to-market bread. And I always have a loaf of grains galore and a loaf of sourdough in my freezer and just pull it out slice by slice and warm it up and unfreeze it and eat it. And when I go to Denver, where my children are, I always have orders for bringing farm-to-market bread to them. And I just think it's one of the best whole grain products that is available, and you can get it at the grocery store, and it makes it so convenient. So I know it's not a go-to bakery stop for us, but I think it is a treasure that Kansas City has.
All right. Thank you, Pat. So that's a recommendation for farm-to-market bread. And although that isn't quite a destination bakery, it's more of a local item that you would find on local shelves.
I think she makes a really good point, though, that farm-to-market really has revolutionized bread. And I think by extension, baking in Kansas City.
Agreed.
You know, it's just we didn't have any great bread back in the era where they started making great bread. And they've made it available to the masses, and so it's not Wonder Bread, but it, you know, it's much more accessible to the average person, and you can grab a loaf at your grocery store, and I do it all the time.
Let's hear from Jay in Kansas City. Hi, Jay.
Hi, guys. How are you all?
Good. How about you?
Good. Well, I have a place. I'm pretty sure Charles wrote about it. and it's Hearth Bakery up in Western Missouri. I don't know if you already talked about this morning. Yeah, I just tuned
no,
in.
Not yet. But why don't you share what you like to get there, and then we do have some critics recommending that place, so we'll hear their reviews as well.
I only take a ride up there a couple times a year, so I'm guilty. I should go more. But there's a young gentleman, Dylan Lowe. I think he's only like 21 or 22 years old, and he graduated from the Culinary Institute. And I'm telling you, that he does a boulet that's just unbelievable. But he also does a sourdough, and you know some of the that we say common breads now, like a ciabatta. But I was just overwhelmed with his crust, and I couldn't believe that a 21-year-old had opened up this bakery. I know he had the help of his parents, but the bread was just really, really something else, and the pastries too. So,
all right. Well, thank you, Jay. We do have a couple of critics recommending Hearth Bakery, Charles.
Well, it's mostly during the week a bread bakery, as Jay was saying, and wonderful breads. On weekends, they do have pastries, including, I think Jenny and I will agree, the best apple fritters.
Oh my gosh.
In Kansas City. I mean, the best. It's in Weston. If you don't call them and ask for directions, you will never find it because it's not on the main drag.
So it's the opposite of you can't miss it.
Exactly. I missed it many times looking for it. And they do serve breakfast on, I think, Saturdays and Sundays now.
I don't know about Sunday. I know Saturday for sure.
It may be closed on Sunday. You're right.
Yeah, I think it's closed on Sunday. Opens at 7.
Wonderful place.
What do you get there?
Well, I only go on the weekends, you know, when they do have sweet things. And because it is a bread bakery, they do wonderful French toast, really great French toast.
And Jenny, what do you get?
You know, this place is one of those places where if you're looking for kind of you've got a lazy Saturday and you're looking for a way to kind of spend the day, drive up, get up early, get your mug of coffee and drive to Weston to the bakery and have the blueberry fritters or the apple fritters for breakfast at Hearth Baking Company. Grab a couple of loaves to take home with you. Check out his handmade oven, basically the oven that he's baking all this bread in. He made himself inside this really cute, it's an adorable place to go. And he's really interesting to talk to. But start with the fritters and then drive into Weston and make a day of it. Do some shopping. And
what's the place that has that diner? Maybe it's called the Weston Diner. I don't know, that has the great homemade pies while we're on this baking subject.
Yeah, I know. You're going to ask me that, and I don't know the answer to that.
Oh, great pie.
Well, anyway. There's somewhere in Weston with great pie, everybody.
And that is on the main drag. I think it's called the Weston Cafe or the Weston Diner.
But Hearth Bread Company is really worth going to. Definitely worth making a trip.
Let's talk to Haifam in Overland Park. Hi, Haifam.
Good morning. How's everybody?
Good. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing very well. It's a nice, beautiful waiting for the Sunday.
And what can you recommend?
Now, there are two places, and I think I'm pronouncing one maybe incorrectly. In North Kansas City, it's a little bakery, a lunch place. It's, I think the word is L-A, then M-O-N-D-E, Le Monde Bakery.
Yeah, Le Monde.
Yeah, they're usually open until about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Whenever I make my way up there, I usually like to buy two things. One is a large French bread, is my favorite. And the other one is a pastry type, I think it's called palmier or something like that. It is a sweet in the shape of a butterfly, multi-layered with sugar on it. That is awesome. The other place I recommend, and I tell people whenever I get a chance to, is if you want to get the best pita bread in town, there is a grocery store on 87th Street right by Monrovia behind the Taco Bell. It's called Pack Halal. Next to it, they have, which is part of the business, a place called Trade Roots. They bake pita bread every day, I think, except for one day, Monday. It is the best pita bread. I usually buy it in packets, and each packet, I think, has 8 or 10 in it. You can freeze it in the package, and then when you want to eat one, just take it out, put it in the toaster, toast it to whatever level you want, and just go ahead and make sandwiches. One of the reasons, other than the taste, that I like them is that when you toast it enough, it really opens up like a pocket, and then you can make a sandwich, not have to struggle trying to open it, and it just breaks apart. This one doesn't, and it tastes awesome.
Okay, so that's cool. We've got a recommendation for Pak Halal, which makes, according to Haifam in Overland Park, the best pita bread ever and Le Monde Bakery in North Kansas City. There's some news about Le Monde Bakery.
Yeah, actually. So the owner, Jeff Dover, has announced that he's going to be basically expanding into the space that's right next to Le Monde, which will create more space to sit and enjoy if you ever go in there for lunch. But he's also going to be adding on bagels and bialys to his menu. So he'll be able to do those both for wholesale and resale. And then eventually he hopes to put a wood-fired oven in the space and do what's called Montreal bagels, which are wood-fired, basically bagels cooked in a wood-fired oven instead of more of a gas oven. So, yeah, he's got big plans over there at Le Monde, and he's been around so long. I'm so glad to kind of see him finally kind of be able to expand his business and grow it.
It'd be nice to go there and have more than three tables.
Absolutely. He deserves it.
So let's explore the sweet side of bakery land for a moment, because we've talked a lot about bread, but we have a caller who wasn't able to stay on the line who was looking for, this is intriguing to me, the equivalent of a chocolate cream pie that she used to get at the municipal airport. I don't know if anyone else is familiar with the municipal airport.
Well, there used to be a restaurant there, there hasn't been a restaurant there since, I think, the 50s or 60s.
60s, yeah. I have never tried a cream pie at the airport, so I have no frame of reference personally.
Well, you said it was like a chocolate cream pie? Was it more
she wants something that's like what she had there, which was a chocolate cream pie. But I think she's looking for one just like that one. So maybe we aren't going to be able to match that one, but does anyone have a chocolate cream pie joint around town?
Oh, I would send her to try the French silk tippins. I mean, just go to the grocery store. That sounds, you know what I mean? It's just a little bit of a different take on a chocolate pie, but that I would send her right there.
And Jill, while we're on this sweet pastry type bakery, tell me about Dolce. That's on your list.
Yes, Dolce is a wonderful place. Just had a lemon bar from there recently. It's a wonderful bakery. Erin Brown does a wonderful job. She's been at it for a number of years. They moved over into a new space a couple years ago and rebranded. And I tell you, it's just the cutest place with all kinds of baker's puns on the blackboards and just all kinds of delicious things in the case. They also have a really cool cobbler night starting, I believe, in May or June. And that is always really fun to go to. I think it's Tuesday or Thursday. I think it's Tuesday maybe. But worth checking on. I'm sure it'll be on their website. And that's just, you know, it's community. It's fun. It's the kind of baked goods you remember from your childhood.
And Charles, what about Sasha's?
Oh, I love Sasha's. It's down on, gosh, would that be 9th Street?
It's downtown.
Yeah. It's downtown. And the star of that place is the pastry chef, Carter Holton, who's, you know, I think a masterful pastry chef.
He used to be at Le Fou Frog, right?
And he's been a couple of other places too. And, you know, he's not only a very talented pastry chef, he sings too. Sometimes he sings and bakes at the same time.
Audibly?
Yes. Oh, yeah. He's a beautiful voice.
Like the people dining can hear it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you should ask.
Okay.
And the pastries are so beautiful. Really beautiful.
Truly beautiful.
And Sasha's, that's a new place, right? Or no.
New-ish, but it has new management.
Couple years.
Mm-hmm. I understand. Yeah. So.
Right. It's about 2 years old, I think.
Okay. And so that's a downtown bakery. And Jill, on the more savory side, talk to us about Tous Les Jours. That's a French-Korean bakery with a really fascinating international history that we've talked about on this show. But what do you like to get there?
Well, I went in and just kind of grabbed the tray and the tongs. They have a very long case right when you walk in. I would say maybe it's at least 12 feet, maybe longer. It's well lit, and there's cards next to each item, and you will see, I believe, Korean language next to it. So you go around and you start to pick out all the different items you'd like, and you take them up to the cash register and check out there. What I thought was fascinating, sweet corn, mung beans, different kinds of pastes, and also little fugazi pizza type things with hot dogs in them that are much sweeter than you would imagine. So just really an introduction into a totally different flavor palette for us.
And where is Tous Les Jours located?
It's Metcalf and 103rd in the shopping center next to a dance place called Dégagé.
Okay, so you can't miss that one. You'll see
Dégagé. Not too hard to find, yeah.
Let's talk to Steve in North Kansas City. Hi, Steve.
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, my question was follow-up to the person who called in and talked about the Levy's rye bread. And I'm wondering, is there anybody in the Kansas City area that makes a rye bread that's, you know, is close to that European style? Everything I see is pretty much just a slightly darker white bread, too squishy and moist for my taste anyway, and I end up ordering bread from Chicago because I can't find anything here. So if anybody has a recommendation, I'd appreciate it. I'll hang up and listen.
Okay, so Steve is looking for a European-style rye bread, something that is not merely a slightly darker white bread with little seeds in it.
I'm trying to think. I'm always on the hunt for good rye bread because it is hard to find here. And I'm trying. Doesn't Farm to Market make a seasonal rye bread?
I think they do, but it might not be quite what he. You know, I'm not sure it's what he's looking for, but that's a possibility.
And maybe Heirloom does too. It seems like I recently bought a loaf there. So
Heirloom might be a place to try. We're not sure about that, but good luck on the quest for rye bread, and I hope that caller lets us know if he ever finds what he's looking for independently of us, because I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued by someone who loves rye in such a specific way that he has it shipped from Chicago. Let's talk to Mike in Lenexa. Hi, Mike.
Hello, Gina. So I have, my grandmother is Polish. She's long passed, and she used to make cookies for the family that were a real light, flaky crust that were usually in the form of a bow tie and had powdered sugar on it. And the name of the cookie is a kruszyki. And I've been looking for a Polish cookie like that would match my grandmother's skill at baking them, and was wondering if there's any type of bakery that would have kruszyki in town.
So we're playing Stump the Critics today, but so this is a very specific request. But does anyone know of at least an Eastern European bakery that might have what Mike is looking for?
Well, I don't know about a bakery, but I'll tell you, Mike, your timing is perfect because I think we're coming on Polski Day in Kansas City, Kansas, which has a huge assortment of Polish cookies. And in fact, I only go there for the cookies.
A big street festival.
Where?
It's an annual street festival.
Well, it's actually, yes, it is, but it's the food component is actually in a church. And I'm trying to remember what the name of the church is. But if you
Kansas City, Kansas, maybe?
It is, well, yes, it's in Kansas City, Kansas. And gotcha. It's up on top of a hill, and I want to say it's St. John's, or it was St. John's, or But the cookies galore, and they freeze beautifully.
There's also Irina's Bakery. That, I believe, is Polish, maybe a little Eastern European, and it's out south, I believe. It's been many years since I've been.
119th.
119th. Yeah. So I might try there as well for your cookies. And if not, I'm sure she could make them special order if you called.
Irina's Bakery. I love, though, there must be something about baked goods that once you've had something that plays a special role in your life, you've got to find something just like that again. Let's talk to Alex in Waldo. Hi, Alex.
Hi, good morning.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks. I heard you guys give a really nice shout out to Farm to Market, which was founded by a good friend of mine, Fred Spompanato, who went on to open another bakery over in the crossroads of 17th and Summery called Fervere. And I hadn't heard you guys talking about Fervere, and I wanted to plug it because I think they make the best bread. Fred has since retired and loving retirement. But the breads they're making up there are still based on his recipe from guys that he trained that are totally amazing. Their orchard bread is wonderful. The cheese slipper, I think, is a singular experience. And in the summer, they do cheese slippers kind of like pizzas. So they'll run a couple hundred of them, and the line goes like around the block. But they'll bring in local chefs. I think the chef from Novel did a couple.
Alex,
they worked with the guy.
I got to jump in because you've referenced the orchard bread and the cheese slipper. But for people who haven't tried them, what are those?
Oh, sorry, yeah. So the orchard bread is amazing. They've got just like fruit, a lot of dried fruit and walnut nuts in them. So they're really great for like sweet or savory sandwiches during the week or even just as toast. The cheese slipper I think it's a sourdough base, and then they've got three different kinds of cheese in it. I think about a pound of cheese, so it's almost as much cheese as it is bread. And fresh out of the oven on a Saturday with eggs and tomatoes, whatever you pick up at the farmer's market, they're incredible.
Thank you, Alex. So Alex is recommending for Very. And Jill, very quickly, you're recommending the Clock Tower Bakery.
Yes, that's a fun, small one down in downtown Overland Park. Great to stop by there after you've been to the farmer's market. And what I find interesting is they have some Cornish pasties, which kind of like a turnover with savory ingredients inside, vegetable, meat, other things.
So for something with a little filling,
if you want lunch,
British influenced, yeah, I would say British influenced.
Exactly. If you want a little lunch instead of so much breakfast.
Yeah. So that's the Clock Tower Bakery in downtown Overland Park.
Downtown Overland Park.
That's all the time we have for this morning's show on bakeries, but the list we've compiled will be online at kcur.org later today. Jill Silva, thanks for joining us from the Kansas City Star.
Thank you, Gina. This was fun.
And Charles Ferruza of The Pitch, great recommendations.
Thank you.
Jenny Vergara of Feast Magazine, thank you.
Have a great weekend.
You too. And that's a wrap. Keep talking about bakeries on Twitter. We're at KCURCST. Monday, we've got a show on the history of weekends, plus with the way technology and our economy are changing in the workplace, what is the future of the weekend? Do you still have one? That's Monday. Don't miss it. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross, with Fridays by Jen Chen. We get lots of help from interns Glenn Frizzell and Coy Duggar. Linda Scher runs the board for us. And our music is by Spoonbender Labs. I'm Gina Kaufman, signing off.